Last Supper. What would be your final meal on Earth? I'm Jonathan Green. We asked leading chefs to tell us what they'd cook if it's the last thing they cook. This time we'll meet a leading light of the culinary world and of sustainable cooking. Good Foods Chef of the Year for 2024, Joe Barrett.
Joe, hello.
Hello.
Fabulous kitchen.
Thank you.
Beautiful place.
It is. It's a bit kooky.
Tell me about it.
Well, we're standing in the kitchen at the Bowls Club in Lawn, which is a bit odd. It's kind of a clash between commercial kitchen and a retro 90s vibe. Domestic.
and Lawn is, of course, a beautiful place to be on the surf coast here in Victoria, just west of Melbourne. Lovely little village seaside town.
It is. I do think it's getting like a little slice of Melbourne at the moment with great foodie scene here. Really good restaurants. And a lot of people from Melbourne do come down and stay here.
So a meal before dying. Would your mind instinctively run that way, do you think?
I have to say I've never thought about it. You know, in the kitchens, often you speak about really odd things because you spend so much time with your staff, and it has been thrown around every now and then, and it's always come back to the same thing, which was my dad's spaghetti bolognese, which I think if anyone else had it, you know, I think at one point he was putting tomato soup in it. Sorry, Dad. It's not gourmet, but it has so many nostalgic memories that I love and very comforting. However, I don't know if I would cook it for myself. It's not the same.
Okay. Yeah, I know that's part of its mystique.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely the idea of Dad overfilling the bowl and there's lots of cheese on top of it, and it's not the healthiest thing, but it's so comforting. I love that idea of being comfortable before you die.
I've got to say though that your cooking is a bit removed from that.
Yeah, although I'm going to make some cheese today, but it's definitely not smothered in cheese and it's quite light and represents the garden.
The garden and making things, fundamental to the ethos of Chef Jo Barrett. She's an award-winning chef who's spent her career dedicated to sustainability. From head chef at Oak Ridge in Yarra Valley, where she tended a veggie garden, to the Future Food System, a closed-loop home and dining room at Melbourne's Federation Square between 2021 and 2022. Her new restaurant, Little Picket, at the Bowls Club in Victoria's coastal city Lawn, combines that ethos and her shimmering creativity. Her love of seasonal produce, a commitment to sustainability and culinary passion makes it unsurprising that her final meal would be one that she would want to make herself.
Here is Jo is just slicing a lemon here in two, and there's a small slab of your halloumi, which you're popping a spot of salt to the top of. What are we going to make here? There is halloumi, there's lemon, there's broad beans, there's pickled lemons.
Yes, so the pickled lemons, when we opened Little Picket, I think for the first 2 or 3 months, we didn't have to buy a lemon because people were
citrus
just dropping
does pretty
them
well
in.
Down here.
So the idea of if I'm going to die, I'm going to call on my friends to bring some lemons over, and then I've just sliced them really, really thinly, and then 50-50 apple cider vinegar and white wine vinegar, and then a lot of sugar. So it becomes really syrupy. And then I've poured the hot pickling liquid over the sliced lemons. It's really sweet. But that tanginess actually comes from the lemon pith.
So how long then would that need to sit for that to balance up?
The longer they sit, the better, but you could use them after 15 minutes.
Right.
So it's a quick pickling method. And then the halloumi is organic milk, and then this is a really nice cheese because you don't need any cheese culture. You can just
how do you make halloumi?
Just heat the milk, and then I'm going to pod broad beans while I do. So you heat the milk and set it with some rennet, and then cut the curd and hoop the curd.
Poop the curd.
Poop the curd.
There's, there's something I want on a t-shirt.
Poop. And then it gets pressed and then sliced, and then you boil, or not boil, but you reheat the cut set curd in the whey. So it's a really, you could make halloumi in a day, which is what I like about it. And why we have it on the menu, because we go through so much, we don't have time to mature it.
It is very popular in your restaurant. With good reason, I think.
Yeah, and that's and we just grill it. So that's what we're going to do now. And then we've got the tiniest little garden out the back, 5x5.
Just here. Yeah.
As well as we're really lucky to kind of share a garden in Janjuk with Bell's Harvest. So they do vegetable boxes. And we kind of go there and pick and then do a bit of gardening each week. So I've got some broad beans, but these have come from our plot out the back, because after this we're going to mulch in the green manure.
Okay.
So we had to pick them. And so gardening, I definitely on my last day on earth wanted to spend some time in the garden.
Can you sculpt your... I'm interested in this as an idea, whether you can sculpt your gardening around final outcomes, around a menu potentially, or whether you want to be more at the whim of a pretty broad seasonal palette.
It's definitely not planned, because you never know what's going to grow. So I look for interesting...
What's going to do well.
Yeah, and it's. I love the idea of planting an ingredient that I've never seen before, or, you know, the guys at Kinsfolk in Moriac this week, it was incredible. So we get a lot of produce from them. They're organic growers. Mm. And Tom and Bridie send me a text message at the start of the week saying, we're picking this. And this week was the hardest one ever.
Uh-oh.
Because the produce was insanely just incredible. Purple wombok and purple daikon radish and purple snow peas, things I'd never seen before. And zucchinis started this week. And so I had this moment of, I could write two menus. And I love that idea of creating a menu to suit what's happening outside and then feeding people what they need for that weather condition or that environment, rather than, I find it really difficult actually to write a menu not knowing what's around.
Which is, and you get labelled a little as a champion of sustainability, but it's almost an accidental consequence of the way that you go about things.
Yeah, I definitely didn't set out for that. It just, that's what I believe cooking should be. It's what my nan did, you know, and we had vegetable garden growing up for a while there, and I really am not in doing anything new. Just, I'm cooking like a lot of people, like their grandparents, really, just from what's there, and it just happens to be that is the sustainable way to cook and live. I think, like Yost said all the time with Future Food System, we've just stepped away from food or the food system, and we just got to get back into it and prioritise it in our life. Like, food is what keeps us alive, but it's the last thing that we think about. Whereas for me, I don't know, like a beautiful broad bean, you got to look forward to that, not use it out of season.
It's... I mean, so much else flows from that. If we all spent lives even just a little bit more in contact with the system that feeds us, it would be transformative.
Oh, yeah. We would treat each other better. Our moods would change. We'd be healthier. You know, we use less plastic because we're not buying things out of season. They're just there. You know, that's been the amazing part about working with Moriac and having these gardens is... We just go pick and it comes in a crate and it comes here and we unpack it, and it's really exciting. You get really passionate about food. You're in tune with the weather. Like, it's, there's so many things that trickle down from it, but in the end it's just cooking and it's just food. But it can have such a big effect, which is what I love. I'm going to blanch these.
So the broad beans are potted here and a bit of blanching is to be done.
I think also for the last meal, having a fried, salty, sour piece of cheese is pretty good.
Pretty spot on, really. You're now freed from cholesterol concerns.
Yeah. I'm just going to double pod.
The double podding begins.
when I was little, I remember we had a, actually wrote about this in my book, but we had this vegetable garden that we all shared, our neighbours. And I remember really, it's probably more the smells and the sensations of being plonked down next to the beans and tomato plants. And I was between the rows and they were way bigger than me, because I must have been maybe 3 or 4. And the smell of the tomato leaves and the...
That stays with you utterly for life.
And I think that's why I love gardening so much. When you're picking and you're amongst all the leaves, it's very nostalgic, that feeling.
What size do you double pod down to, and what size do you think that'll be just fine as it is?
Oh, there's only 2 layers.
Yeah, no, rather, well, so a more mature bean, yes, I would double pod you. But one I think you'd be soft enough as you are.
Yeah, these little ones, they're a nice texture.
Yeah.
You pop them in.
There we are. See, it's a little...
contrasting colour.
That's what it is. they're a wonderful thing to broad bean.
Yeah.
Worth every bit of effort.
You know what I haven't done very much of is there's the method of cooking where you cook them and braise them in their pod.
Right.
I haven't really done that. I think it's quite big in Middle Eastern cooking.
Do you then open them up to just eat the bean, or do you go the whole thing?
Go whole hog.
Mm-hmm.
Whole pod.
Well, it certainly saves the mucking about, I suppose.
They're really good when they're tender, but I don't know about that.
Once they get a bit older.
Yeah.
Which is, again, this is one of the wonderful things about gardens, is that you get to eat produce at different stages of its development. You know, rather than the thing that ends up in the shop, which is a mature, like a young carrot or a very young broad bean, where do you buy that? You can't.
Yeah, or, you know, broad bean flower or broad bean leaf, which is often the most exciting bit. And, you know, with a restaurant, everyone could be serving a grilled piece of cheese, but you might be able to put those leaves on it or those flowers, and you have a completely different dish, completely different flavour.
The flowers are beautiful, the leaves are delicious.
Yeah. I think the leaves are my favourite part of a broad bean.
Well, they have a beautiful bean taste. They're an incredible leaf.
And I just realised that they get bitter once the fruit starts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you just tipping them or using the bigger leaves?
We were using the tips, and then as soon as the flowers started, they were still really good. But then as soon as the fruit or the vegetable started to grow, the leaves went really bitter. That was this year's discovery.
As a word from the wise. Which is another good thing about it, is it's a constant process of discovery and, you know, finding out. All right, the beans are potted. The cheese has been seasoned.
So I use cast iron pans for this cheese particularly. They just has such a nice heat in it, because we're going to fry it and then bake it in the oven. And the underside always comes out better than the actual part that you fry on the stove. You'll see, it's also heaps of oil too. It's hard sometimes to get vegetable oil or, you know, grapeseed oils and things like that from Australia. But this one comes from Margaret River. And then we get it in boxes, and then they reuse the oil once it's done. So we have an oil collection out the back. Make sure it's hot. Heaps of oil. You can see some of the whey comes up.
Yeah, what a mysterious thing cheese is.
Yeah, I really like to do a baked feta as well. It takes a little bit longer. But because we're only open the 3 days, we don't have any cheese maturation like we did at Oak Ridge.
Okay.
So all the cheeses that we've been making, because I always want to make cheese, has been kind of fresh cheeses. So we do a lot of fromage blanc or cacio ricotta or ricotta.
Which you can get done and use.
Yeah, so, you know, it might last for a week or two, but nothing that takes 6 weeks to make. I do miss that a little bit. Same with the charcuterie that we've been making. So we make terrines and mortadellas that are a lot quicker than, say,
like
a salami or... So it's been really interesting trying to get my head around those changes. So get it pretty dark.
Nice dark underside there. We'll back to the other side. flames circling the pan, and then with the pan into the oven, which is nice and hot.
200.
Okay.
200 degrees. And then while that's going, I'm going to get a little bit of the lemon pickle, pop it in there.
Just the juice from the pickle?
Yeah, and then some olive oil, maybe a touch more, and then put some of these.
To dress your broad beans.
And then one of my favourite things, pepper, quite a bit of pepper, a little bit of salt in there, and then that becomes the dressing. Emulsify it a little bit. And then we wait. You know when it's ready, when it kind of swells and you get these like little bubbles that looks like it's melting? I have this problem after being a baker. If I look into the oven and I see a change happening, it's like hypnosis and I can be drawn.
You're drawn to it.
A couple minutes later, I'm still looking into the oven. I love watching, you know, croissants change shape or bread.
I'm interested in that. I mean, that being a baker. Because it seems to be often with so many people in kitchens, there's such a division between people who like to bake and people who like to otherwise cook. It's a different kind of mindset, perhaps, in some way.
Yeah, I definitely had an aversion to anything pastry when I first started cooking. And then I decided if I wanted to be a good chef, I needed to know that. I did a patisserie course in Geelong at the Gordon, and at the same time started at Movida Bakery, which then turned into Tivoli Road Bakery. And then I got out of that so much more than I expected. And I guess that was probably more than Oakridge and more than meeting Matt and Yost. That was the biggest change in my cooking and my ethos, because I met Michael James, who's one of the most talented, hardworking, produce-driven chefs, and he was a chef as well as a baker, that, you know, I'd never met before. And I'd come from kitchens where I was really scared, could get yelled at, and then I went to Tivoli Road Bakery on Movida and worked with Michael, and if you made a mistake, you didn't get yelled at. It was, oh, this is what went wrong. And he would explain it to you, and I thought, oh my God, I'm learning so much. Like, and I'm
been?
Not scared. And then you could ask questions, and we were working with flour, so you could see exactly like cheese and that transformation throughout the year with what the cows are eating. It became, well, how's the wheat been grown? And how's it been milled and stored? And I was like, whoa.
How wonderful to be lost to the complexities of ingredient. And I mean, how important to be in touch with that.
It was incredible. But you do get that through repetition and working with one ingredient for a long amount of time. And I feel like that's a bit lost now.
It's probably the privilege too of someone in a professional kitchen that you have enough repetition, enough exposure to quantity to sort of sense those things.
Yeah, we're really lucky. It's funny because chefs spend hours in a room, you know, hours in a kitchen away from, some of them don't even have windows, so you're away from outside. However, you're probably more in tune with nature than people who...
Rich paradox.
It's so odd. It's such a juxtaposition. Yeah. Ooh, our cheese is ready.
Ooh. Look at that.
Pops up.
Look at that. It's really rounded and loafed up, isn't it?
And then this beautiful. Side's the better one when you flip it over.
Oh, okay. Didn't you like the rounded puppy bit?
I love the crusty, crunchy. So again, a lot of salt.
A bit more salt there, yeah. Now the magic of composition.
Honey
drizzled on the top, mingling with the salt there on the top of the cheese. Already a fine combination of tastes.
Yeah. The honey has changed a lot. You know, like everything, it's so seasonal, but when we first opened, it was really wet, like the season was a lot of rain. And to see it now, it's got so much more flavour than then.
Squeeze of lemon.
You've got to put the honey on first and then the lemon, so the...
Doesn't soggy the
beautiful
crust that you've acquired on your cheese.
And then...
Pickled lemon laid on just so. Sorry, draped.
Draped. They're so thin, you can just drape them.
They are beautifully cut. And now that pop of fantastic colour from the broad beans. What a gorgeous dish.
So simple. And then I was standing here at the bench and someone knocked on the back door and they had their dog on the lead and they said, oh, do you want some Sherville? So I've got some Sherville. Yeah. And then I always put an extra drizzle of olive oil.
Okay. That's sublime. That's worth dying for.
Let's eat.
What would you call that?
Grilled halloumi with pickled lemon and broad beans on their deathbed.
Very nice.
You can call it deathbed halloumi for short.
Oh, look, little bug.
Oh, hello. Extra protein. You mentioned before about your dad's spaghetti bolognese and that sort of evocativeness that food memory brings with it. The evocations from this that you've just made?
Yeah, I think dad growing up, and it's so funny how that saying, your parents are always right. My dad's an amazing musician, and when we were growing up, he said, you know, practice, learn skills, learn technique, and he would just practice and practice and practice, and he still does now, and he's one of the best musicians in the country, but he's still practicing every week. So I think this dish is still him through skill and technique. I think he's a massive influence on why I cook the way I cook.
That's a beautiful thought. And I guess that's the core of so much creative process, isn't it? Is the skill and technique that lets you be free.
Well, he writes the most beautiful music and his improvisation is incredible, but it's only because he knows his craft so well. And I think that's what I get out of cooking, is you learn your technique, but it gives you ultimate creativity.
We should taste this this deathly dish. Oh, so many tastes. The honey, the crunch of the cheese,
the lemoniness.
The pickled lemon is fantastic. Joe, thank you. It's a worthy Last Supper, I must say. A glorious combination of technique and freshness and flavour. Perfectly done.
Oh, thank you.
To your eternal reward.
Die happy.
That was Joe Barrett's Last Supper, grilled halloumi with pickled lemon and broad beans on their deathbed.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.